Golf Smarter Premium number 558, published on September 20, 2016, is brought to you by Golf Overnight. If you're about to take a vacation or a golf trip, don't have your golf bag add to the stress of airline travel. This trip, have your clubs waiting for you, not the other way around. You know, so often people ask me, who's the most famous or interesting guest I've had on the podcast? Well, today's show easily ranks in the top five. This story you're about to hear is one of those based on a true story movies that needs to be made. And the crazy part, as you're going to hear, is that our guest has never really talked about his adventure. So you're hearing it here first. Why am I bringing this up now? Well, it's because there's no possible way that he could have used Golf Overnight to transport his clubs, and you'll get what I mean pretty quickly. Anyway, there's very few arguments as good as his as to why you're not using this awesome service on your next trip, especially since you're a Golf Smarter listener and able to save 20% on your order. Use Golf Overnight to safely have your clubs make the round trip worry-free. Golf Overnight wants you to try their service right now. So use our exclusive promo code and you get 20% off. Put in GSMART, that's GSMART when you're checking out, and save 20% at golfovernight.com. There's a link in the episode show notes from today, or click on their ad at the homepage of golfsmarter.com. Meet the 19 handicapper who played in another country's National Open and lived to tell us about it.
This is Golf Smarter Premium. Here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome to the Golf Smarter Podcast, Justin.
Hey, Fred, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm good.
You've got a crazy story. I bumped into a mutual friend of ours in the airport in London, and he said, oh, you got to talk to my friend Justin. He's got the craziest story. But before we get to what the story is, let's talk a little bit about your golf game, what kind of golfer you are. How often do you get to play? Okay.
You know, I'm a casual golfer. I get out 3 times a month.
Okay.
Or every other weekend. But my handicap, at least when I was playing there a couple years ago when I played in the North Korean Open.
Spoiler alert.
Oh.
We've never told anybody what we're talking about, but go ahead.
Well, cat's out of the bag. So played in the North Korean Open, and I think I had a handicap of around 18.
At the time, 18?
So if you know what kind of golfer I am, I'm a 18 handicap.
Okay, and now?
I haven't measured in a while. I've just been too busy with work. I still get out and play.
Your handicap.
I played at Half Moon Bay last weekend. But
okay, so you also live in the Bay Area. All right, so the cat's out of the bag. This is crazy. Everybody would love to play in an open championship, but it's so out of reach. But you had an idea, right? I mean, tell me the story.
No, you're right. Everybody wants to play in an open championship. And, well, I'll never be good enough to play in the U.S. Open or Australian Open, any open for that matter. But there was I had my shot, and that was the North Korean Open.
When did you play in the North Korean Open?
Well, just to give you a little backtrack, my dad was from who would want to go to North Korea in the first place, right? Like, is that on anybody's travel list?
Only probably. Secretary of State, I would think.
Probably not even the Secretary of State.
Definitely not to play golf.
But my dad is from, he grew up in communist Czechoslovakia. When I was in high school, I was pretty active in the Model UN team and debate. So I learned quite a bit about North Korea, and the politics between the North and the South. So that kind of sparked my interest. But then I came across an article in Golf Magazine about the North Korean Open. And I thought, you know what, this might be my chance to go there. And, golf is a passion of mine. And you know, why don't I just see what happens? Why don't I reach out to the travel company? It was called Lupine Travel. I reached out to them. I said, hey, are you guys taking any Americans? I don't even know if Americans are even allowed in North Korea. And this was in 2014.
Okay.
So there was already, you had, I think there was one student who was jailed for bringing in a Bible. We've always had very rocky relations. It's been ongoing forever.
So. Now, which of the crazy leaders was in charge at the time? Was it the dad or was it the crazy son?
It was Kim Jong-un, the son.
The son. This is the one that recently had a family member murdered because he fell asleep in a... He had him shot because he fell asleep in a meeting.
He did, yeah. I think it was his uncle.
Right.
That was a close relative. It wasn't a second cousin of his.
Exactly.
But what's interesting is that this golf course is actually famous because this is where... there's only one golf course, by the way, in North Korea, and that's a Pyongyang Golf Course Golf Center. And on the opening, which was in the mid-90s, Kim Jong-il, I believe he shot maybe like two over par or something. I think he had five holes in ones or something. Well, I have it right here.
Really? I mean, it's you think that this guy... Who's gonna question him if he throws down another ball or he hits from 10 feet out and says he's on the tee box? Who's gonna stop him? Right? They'll have you murdered for questioning his authority.
So I have it right here. The course is a par 71. That was the one that I played on. And when it opened in 1994, he scored a record 73.
I'm sorry, I find it funny because I don't believe it. I don't believe it at all.
Hold on, my apologies. No, 73 was the best in a tournament. It's a par 71.
Okay.
Par 71, and it was and 73 was the best record, but apparently he scored a 34 in 1994.
Wait a minute, a 34? Sorry,
that's how obscene it is. That's why I got my numbers wrong here. Yeah, so the...
34, on 9 holes or all 18?
All 18.
He had scored a 34.
Yeah,
had so that's less than two one. Shots a hole.
That's correct. So
and five holes in one.
Yeah, and then he retired the next day because he didn't want to ruin the sport for anyone else. And that's the story that still stands. And
so what's his handicap?
I don't know. He just
North
played the
Korea
one time.
Is his handicap.
He played the one time. So I don't think we have enough data to give him a true handicap, but... He did play the best round of golf, apparently.
Ever. It's in the books. All right. So you reached out to this agency and said, are there any Americans playing in the North Korean Open here in 2014?
That's correct.
Keep going. And like, they're saying, why do you care? What did they ask?
Well, it was a company in the UK that had been putting this on for a few years. So I know that they had a track record of successful tournaments, and I think this was the fifth annual Open that they've had, and I just simply asked him, are you accepting Americans? And he said, yeah, let me I don't know how he got these connections with the North Korean government, but I sent him all my information, copy of a passport. I thought it was silly, but we'll see what the North Korean government has to say. And a month later they said, you've been approved, and then they will issue you a tourist visa a few weeks prior to the visit. So on that, I was in and wired out a lot of money to a guy I never met in Europe, and they pretty much took care of everything in terms of all the travel. I mean, everything was basically covered in this package.
How much did it cost you? Do you remember?
Yeah, I think it was about... It was about $2,000 for 4 days, including the tournament and everything.
It's pretty reasonable, actually.
I mean, this is a once in a lifetime opportunity. And then I paid for my...
you don't realize when you say once in a lifetime and you're in North Korea in the same sentence, it could be the last in a lifetime. You do understand that.
That's true. You do take some risk. Yeah. The girl I'm dating now, she would never let me.
No.
She actually asked me, she's like, you wouldn't do anything like that again in the future. I said, I don't think so. She's like, okay.
And did you talk to your parents about this?
Yeah, I actually sat my mother down when I found out that I was, you know, approved, and I said to myself, you know, I'm gonna do this. And we sat down and I said, Mom, I'm gonna go play in the North Korean Open. And she goes, you couldn't have found a closer tournament to play?
Like a mom. It's like, yeah. Any parent would say, like, really?
My dad, on the other hand, you know, he says, no, this will be a really good experience, you know, if you make it back. I love it if you make it back. But
if you make it back. He didn't ask to caddy? He didn't want a caddy for you?
Yeah. No, that's another story in itself.
Awesome. I'll bring that back up. Sure. But so, continue on with this one.
I really wanted to... This was maybe 8 months before actually participating and flying over to... And the only way to get there is by flying to Beijing. And then the only flights that go in and out of North Korea to Beijing and China. So I took care of all my travel going to Beijing, spent a couple of days there. But in terms of prep, you have to understand the rules. And you really have to respect, their culture. One misstep and you could find yourself doing hard labor for the next 10 years.
At least.
So, so a lot of it was just prep work, and just, you know, things not to do and what to do. And then in terms of preparing for the actual tournament, I really wanted to do well. And so there's no information that you can find on, you know, in terms of yardage, to see what the course looks like. There's no website that you can go to, and just only a handful of people have actually ever played there.
And came out alive.
Yeah, and actually came out alive. And so I actually went to, I was lucky to find Wikimapia, and I found the golf course.
Really?
It was about, an hour, half hour outside of Pyongyang, and found it on a map. There's so few golf courses, when you see a satellite image of a golf course, that I said, that's got to be it. That has got to be the Pyongyang golf course. And then using Wikimapia, I was able to really measure out the course, the yardages. I could see the narrow fairways and really familiarize. It's crazy to think, but I really familiarized myself with the golf course. And I took a good screenshot and a picture and printed it out of each. I wrote down the yardage for, there was quite a few really sharp dogleg lefts, dogleg rights. You could really see which are the, your par fives, your par threes. So then from there on, every day after work, go to this 9-hole course that was pretty much, it wasn't very well kept. Practice a lot the driving range and tried to really visualize each hole. So that was, that was the kind of the prep work that I was doing to get ready for the tournament.
Just kind of familiarize yourself with the layout of the course so that when you get there, you have some idea of what you're trying to do. Okay. And so now you've got it all printed out in your head. You have an idea of what you're doing. You're a 19 handicap.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going there just to try to make the cut, or you're going to win this thing. You're going there to win.
You know what? I was going there to win this thing.
It's dangerous.
Yeah.
It could be dangerous.
It could be very dangerous.
They don't want an American winning over there.
Exactly. Yeah. No American ever won. I knew if I was going to make it back, it'd be one heck of a story.
Someday you'd be on a podcast.
And yeah, I was hoping someday Fred was going to call me up and give me a podcast. So.
All right, well, keep going. This is so good. I love this.
In terms of, in terms of the prep work, that's kind of all that you can do, and get out and play as much as you can.
And had you done a lot of global traveling before this? I know that you said your dad was working overseas, but on your own, have you done a lot of traveling too? Were you comfortable with this idea?
My parents were both. I mean, my dad's from Czechoslovakia, and I've spent a lot of time in the Czech Republic. I have family there, and both of my parents were ice. They were professional ice skaters back in the day, so they did a lot of traveling when they were younger. And so it's sort of, you know, I always kind of grew up with the travel bug.
Right.
And you know, in terms of that list, you know, this was, I guess, one I would knock off early on. I did some traveling beforehand, but this was, you know, this is something completely different level.
Okay, so your parents being professional ice skaters, that's a whole different podcast episode.
That's another.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so now you fly to North Korea. No, you fly to Beijing.
Beijing, yeah.
Change planes.
No, I spent a couple days in Beijing. Just
oh, you did
my own.
Of course.
I went to the Great Wall, Forbidden City.
Cool.
It was great, especially, and I've never really traveled alone like this. So this was really, this was nice.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And it's funny because right before I left, I was getting really nervous I was already extremely nervous. but, you know, I'd done my prep work. I really, you know, I understood the rules of, you know, if you take a picture of the statue, you don't crop it. If somebody hands you a newspaper, for example, and there's a picture of Kim Jong-un or Kim Jong-il, you can't crumple up the newspaper. You know, and that actually ended up happening to me on the flight over. They handed me a newspaper, and there's, I kid you not, a spy behind me on the plane, and then one to my right, watching my every moves, listening to me, leaning over the seat, and it was a very.
When did you become aware that you had that these guys were following you? Or did they introduce themselves at the very beginning?
Well, just sorry to jump ahead, but again to take a step back. I messaged the tour director. I said, "How many other Americans are going?" By the way, he said, "Well, that's funny. You're the only one." So, okay. You know, my parents say, "How many Americans are going?" Oh, there's a handful of us.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
We meet up actually the day of the flight because I was really curious of what, you know, who are the other people that were going to be on this tournament? Were they golf professionals? Were they? I mean, I'm sure North Korea really attracts some crazies as well. So I was kind of nervous to see what, you know, who else is going to be playing in this tournament. And when I got in the van that was picking me up, there were four of the other players that were there. Two of them were from Estonia, one from Japan. And, it was, you know, we were talking on the flight over, and we were the only ones flying in. Everybody else was taking the train. There's a,
so this a total- is you're flying from Beijing.
Yes.
Okay.
And I really wanted to take the train in. I thought that'd be a great ride from China to Pyongyang. But then they said, "Oh no, you know, we don't want any Americans to take the train in." So then I had to fly in. And luckily there were three other guys that decided to fly. So, but we were, you know, having just a simple conversation on the plane. And that's when I could see a couple other passengers, officials really listening in to
paying close attention to every word that you're saying.
Yeah. And it's really the first time where you've really had your freedom kind of taken away and you need to watch your actions, what you say. So, I mean, there's a lot of different, you know, it was more than just a golf experience. It was it's unlike anything else. So
I can't imagine. Are you multilingual?
No.
So English, it's all you're speaking, and you're hoping for the best.
That's correct.
Oh man! All right. So now when you got the newspaper and it had his picture on it, were you told in advance, "Don't crumble it," or did someone tap you on the shoulder saying, eh?
"No, oh, nobody's going to tap you and say, they're just going to
arrest you."
You go right to the labor camp. Most likely. This was just one of the rules. You know, I mean, you really want to read all of the, you know, formalities, all the rules, and that, you know, that's just one of them. So
just one.
I knew how to kind of handle the situation if it was. So that was my first test, the way I think of it. So
amazing. It's amazing. All right. So all right. Now you land. There's a couple of you on the plane. Mm-hmm. I mean, I really want the details. I love this story so much.
Yeah, I mean, it gets more and more bizarre as we go. And I'm just, I mean, you get there. And I mean, that runway is, it's a Soviet era runway. I mean, I'm just hoping we don't pop a tire. And then, you know, you walk out of the plane, you step down, and there's military officials all over. And it's like something out of a James Bond movie. You're just feeling
so
uneasy.
Were you wearing
a
coat and tie when you landed? Were you dressed up? Or are you just like, yeah, I'm here?
Oh, I was just my casual, you know, shorts and t-shirt. it's very uneasy feeling. You know, you can't turn on your phone. There's no data. You can't text anybody to say you're there. There's no internet. You're in a black hole, basically. So, you know, you tell... You know, the last email I sent was in Beijing, and hey, if you don't hear from me in 5 days, call the Swedish embassy, because that's the only tie to, you know, the Americans don't even have an embassy there. So, I contacted the Swedish embassy prior to going and said, I will be staying here on these dates.
Smart.
So my family and friends knew, contact the Swedish embassy. So as soon as I walk in, they think I don't look like my picture in the passport. And by the way, the tourist visa is this small little blue. It looked like maybe a third grade project with my picture. It's just kind of copied and pasted right on this blue flimsy booklet. That's your tourist visa. And they looked at my passport and they thought I, you know, it was taken when I was, you know, 13 or something. So they said, it's not you. And I was much younger. So we kind of looked back and said, all right, you know, go ahead. And then everybody else was just somehow sort of through security and customs at this point. But then they really wanted to search through my bag. At this point, you know, I was carrying all the pictures of, you know, the satellite images of the... you know, of the course itself. And I ditched all of this, you know, back in Beijing. You know, just making sure I didn't have any sensitive material. You know, my phone was wiped of any, you know, music that was, could be deemed offensive. You know, took my precautions, but then I had a wireless charger, you know, these small, just with a small UBS. And there was three of these officials kind of looking at it, kind of playing with it. They had no idea what it was, like some spy device that I had. And I was so uncomfortable, like, oh my God, what am I doing? What am I getting myself into? And then they're like, what is this? What do you use this for? How do you explain to the North Korea, you know, this is a wireless charger? So, and, you know, they said, okay, whatever. Go through.
Okay. So I gotta believe at this point you're nervous. But was there a point where you were actually scared?
No, I was never really scared. I was just, you know, it's just like another round of, you're nervous the whole time. I mean, there was never any feeling where there was no time where I was, oh, I'm really comfortable. I'm really, you know, truly enjoying myself. There's always that big brother watching you.
Yeah.
You know? You know, this is the first time where all your freedoms, you know, are taken away. And,
yeah, there's no point where you're sitting there drinking a margarita, go, I can't wait to come back.
Exactly. 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 So.
Okay. So you finally made it through customs and immigration and scrutiny. Did they go through your golf bag too? Or were you allowed to bring your golf clubs, you know?
Yeah. They you know, put the golf clubs through, but you know, they search through the golf clubs. Anyways, so I'm through, and then you have our two guides waiting for us. And so any travel group that goes there, you've got a male guide and a female guide. And then some of the other participants were there as well. And then later on the guys that took the train, they ended up coming in as well later. And so I think in total in the tournament, there's 20 of us. So you had, I think it was four guys from Singapore. You had an Australian. You had a couple from China. You had a couple from the UK, really all over the world. And they were all professionals, all golf aficionados. Really great group of gentlemen. Really, I have to say, really great group. Smart guys. So I was really fortunate to be with such a great group.
And was the common question, what the hell are you doing here?
Oh, I was the butt end of all jokes.
Oh, I gotta believe.
Oh, it was hilarious.
He's not even a golfer.
I mean, on top of that too. I mean, none of us are true, you know, professionals, but right. In terms of golfers, in terms of being the butt of all jokes, you know, we're on the bus, and you know, one of them is just, "Hey, when are we going to drop Justin off at the labor camp? Is that where we're going next?" Like, I was like, "Guys, come on,
leave me alone."
Yeah, this is, you know, I'm taking this seriously. It's not funny, but you know, and they take away, you know, you get to the hotel and they take away your passport. This is probably the most uneasy feeling. They take away your passport. They take away your visa. They take away your ID. They take away your plane ticket. So you're in the total mercy of the North Korean government. And there's no phone to call home. There's no email. There's no internet. So that was really probably the height of the... I was not aware that they were going to take all of my... I mean, you have no ID on you.
You could just disappear at that point and they would, you know, and the government, the Swedish government calls looking for you, go, yeah, we have his paperwork here, but no idea where he is.
No, they didn't have my paperwork. They just knew I was there. That's it. So,
well, wait, no. The Korean government, the North Korean government said, we have all his paperwork. We have his visa and his passport and his ID. We have that. But him, I have no idea.
Yeah, they could come up with any story. So, I remember as some of the gifts, we were supposed to bring gifts too. For the female guides, it was chocolate. So, of course, from San Francisco, I bring them Ghirardelli chocolate. Easy. And for the guys, it's cigarettes. We were told to bring cigarettes.
So, not wireless chargers, huh?
No, not wireless chargers. But I remember the guy holding 20 crates of cigarettes, you know.
Yeah, don't bring any Samsung products in. I'm sure that they don't want to see Samsung from Korea. Okay, so you brought cigarettes and chocolate.
Cigarettes and chocolate. And I remember I was so nervous. I broke up in, you know, one of those packets of cigarettes. I became a smoker right there in Pyongyang for the first time. Yeah, I had to just do something to just, you know, ease the tension. It was just that.
Yeah, make my head fuzzy. I can't handle this.
Yeah. So,
oh man. All right, so let's go out to the golf course now. What happens next?
So, first day is a practice round. You meet your caddy, and now the caddies, they're all dressed the same. There's 20 of them waiting for us to get off the bus. They're on their mid-teens to mid-20s, I'd say, and all female. Oh. And
yep, and Thailand. I played in Thailand, and it was all female caddies.
Is that right? Okay, well, this is my first international tournament, and I didn't know what to expect in terms of a caddy. So, yeah, none of them spoke English, obviously, but you know, the language of golf is international. She actually was very helpful during the actual tournament, but. You know, you just sort of pair up with a caddy that, you know, you make eye contact with, and then, you know, she'll, you know, take care of the clubs and you know, loading the carts. And it's funny. So the carts are brand new. And just getting out there was a trip. So the actual golf course was about, I'd say it was a good half hour outside of Pyongyang. And so we're on a bus and we're going down maybe a 7-lane highway, an old Soviet highway for a good half hour. I mean, and it is bumpy. It is this here is potholes, you know, the size of the bus. So I'm just, you know, and the driver's trying to avoid all the potholes. I mean, that was just an adventure in itself. And you know, you're passing a lot of really poor rural areas, on the way out to the golf course. And so, you know, we get there, we get paired up with our caddies. And the first thing you want to do is, you know, you want to go putt around. You want to go out to the practice green. Well, they've got a practice green. There's no range. So nobody's warming up with their irons, drivers. I mean, you're stuck on that, on the practice green. But the comical part of that practice green is there's only one hole in the middle of the practice
green. So there's 20 guys?
There's 20 guys surrounding this hole, and one at a time, we just take our shot, and then you... It was comical, to say the least. So, yeah. I mean, there were definitely moments of humor in it. So,
thank goodness.
Yeah.
At least you can look back and laugh at it now. I mean, it's just nerve-wracking.
Yeah. And then the course itself, it was designed by, I think it was a Japanese company, and it's in pretty bad shape. I think a lot of the, you know, fairways, the rough, the putting on the green, everything's kind of overgrown.
You say bad shape, it wasn't like it was dried out. It was just that it wasn't manicured well, right?
Yeah.
What time of year was this?
This was late July, early August.
Okay, so they're in their summer.
Yeah, they're in their summer. It's really hot.
Hot and humid, right?
Very hot, very humid.
Yeah.
The green, it's like putting on a fairway here. your ball just, you can use a little bit of force there, but it doesn't go too far. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
You can see why he scored a 34.
I don't think he ever putt. I think they were all, pretty much hole in ones, right? So.
Yeah, exactly.
I had a pretty good practice round, and it's a stroke play. So the first day was just one round of practice, and then the second day was the tournament.
Okay. All right. And was it how many days was the tournament?
It was one day.
Just one round of golf, and that's the North Korean Open.
And that's the North Korean Open.
Live on Wide World Sports. Yeah. How'd you do?
The tournament, I got fourth place.
Wow. Very cool.
Here's my scorecard.
There it is.
There it is.
Oh, yeah.
I scored a 94.
And the winner, what did the winner shoot? And you got fourth place, and all these other guys were professional golfers from around the world?
It was low 80s. It was a gentleman from Japan. Kasahara, funny guy. He was in his 70s. Amazing golfer, but
you couldn't beat a guy in his 70s.
What's that?
You couldn't beat a guy in his 70s.
No,
he was a good golfer.
He was a great golfer.
Awesome.
He was a character more than anything. He was a character. Amazing guy. In terms of the experience itself. So I felt pretty familiar, I did my homework. So I was pretty familiar with the dog leg lefts, dog leg rights, and they have their own rules too. If the ball goes, it's literally fairway and then it's lined with trees. So if you go out into the, it's strict. You're either on the fairway or you're OB, you're out of bounds.
Oh, wow.
You're not allowed to dive, but you're not allowed to walk off that course either.
Wow. And are the fairways fairly wide?
Very narrow. Mm-hmm. A lot of lost balls.
Really?
Not me so much.
So wait, are you playing USGA rules or RNA rules or North Korean rules?
North Korean rules. So, ball goes out of bounds. It's like 20 yards before where it goes out, and then you drop plus one in the middle of the fairway. There's some funny rules. There were these little these spies smoking cigarettes, I remember, in the bushes along each hole, just kind of keeping an eye on you.
Wow.
It's pretty wild. They're sort of hidden. They don't talk. They just kind of crouch down and they're watching you. Somebody's always watching you. Something was weird about holes 5 and 6 on the golf course was military sensitive. I have no idea what that meant. It looked like any of the other holes, but you do not take pictures. If I remember, there were guys in the trees. they had a pair of eyes on you. I mean, golf is a stressful game, but you know, this is like a whole other layer of
this is a whole different layer of stress. This is
a layer of stress, yeah. You know, and in the distance you see hangars, so I'm trying to think, like, why is this the military sensitive hole? Yeah, so you don't want to take any pictures while you're on these two holes, but any other hole you could take a picture.
Oh, and were you able to take pictures and bring them back?
Yeah, I took quite a few photos.
Oh, cool, cool. I'd love you to send me one or two so I can put them up on the site, if you
don't
mind.
I got some really great photos out of the bus, you know, and they, you know, they want to see what you're taking pictures of too, but I brought a bunch of different memory cards that didn't fit the actual camera. Only two of them, only two memory cards fit the camera. And I was just kind of snapping away. You know, I mean, this is something that a lot of people don't get the opportunity to photograph. I'm kind of an avid, it's another kind of hobby of mine is photography. And so I was just kind of clicking away, you know, looking elsewhere. And then I would put it back in my pocket in case they wanted to, you know, see the memory stick or, you know, go through my photos. Because after that practice round, going back to the hotel, they went into my locker because I did bring my iPad with me, which was a mistake now. And then I tried to get back into my safe in the hotel, and somebody had changed the password.
And did they take any of your stuff, or you were never were you ever able to retrieve it out of that safe?
I didn't know what to do, so I went to my guide on the seventh floor, and you know, I said, "Yeah, I put my iPad and a few other things in there, and I can't open it." And she goes, "Why would you? Why would you do that? Why would you put things in the safe?" You know, and so I just said, "Oh, you know, I'm just so used to American maids; they always steal everything." So. You know, and it was like, okay, good answer. And
yeah,
then they said, okay, we're
hiding things.
Yeah. So yeah, exactly. So then they say, well, we've got to call up this guy who's got the key to the locker for that lock, and he lives on the other side of town, so he's gonna drive. It should take him half an hour to get here, or an hour, whatever it was. And you know, I'm thinking, please open it. I don't want to leave my iPad and a few other things in there. Just bizarre things like that. Wow. So, and then, that night before the actual tournament, I had food poisoning myself and actually, one other gentleman from Estonia.
Oh no.
And so I was ready to pull out that day, that morning. I was feeling no energy, just feeling awful. Yeah. No sleep that night.
Oh,
so
sorry. Oh, that's terrible.
But then these, gentlemen from Singapore gave me a small vial of looked like small beans. It was some Chinese medicine. And I was, you know, maybe 90%.
Wow.
So,
wow.
Yeah.
Amazing.
But then I was able to play and I shot a
94.
No, I was, so the actual day of the tournament, I shot a 44 on the front nine.
Good.
And that was, you know, and everybody's looking at me saying, you know, you could win this. You could seriously win this. It started to get in my head a little bit.
Sure.
And then I started feeling the effects again. I guess the medicine wore off. On the back, I ended up shooting a 49. And believe it or not, on the 18th, you know, I birdied hole 11. I had a pretty good score. I mean, relative to the other guys. And I mean, given that the course is in really bad shape. I mean, this is not an easy course. I mean, imagine you're hitting in the rough, you know, the entire eight, all day long. And the, you know, same goes for the, you know, the greens as well. So all these challenges that, you know, you're not used to as a golfer. And I shooting on the 18th hole, I thought, oh my gosh, what happens if I come in first? This is, they're going to put me in jail. This is, you know, something's going to, so, and so I was so nervous. And I actually, looking at my scorecard, I got a 9 on that last hole, and that was a par 5.
Wow.
I was just so rattled. I end up getting fourth, and I was one stroke behind third and then three strokes behind second.
So par that hole, and all of a sudden you're in contention.
Yeah. I probably would have had second. So, but there was a North Korean who played as well. And then I think his score was a little funny from what I heard.
Well, so. Did he win?
No. I mean, Kasahara, the gentleman from Japan, really ran away with it.
The older gentleman.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, everybody's scoring each other. So.
Okay.
And the older gentleman, he won it by a good, I think it was like eight strokes.
Oh,
something.
My.
Yeah, it was just sad. Yeah. I mean, he played. I wish I played with him. But I heard he just had an amazing game. So.
Were you guys playing as foursomes or?
Foursomes.
You did have foursomes. So there were, but you said there were 20 golfers? So there are only five groups?
Yeah. That was right. Yeah.
And what kind of gallery was there? Any? Did people come out to see this?
There was, I can't remember if the TV was there. I really, there's so much. There were a few handfuls of people that were out there to watch us tee off. Yeah. But,
and we don't know if they were spies.
I don't know
or
the
not.
Whole experience. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I was just focused on my golf. Really, I was just focused on my golf game, and I was just so focused at that point. Just I really wanted to do well in this tournament, and really, I was trying to aim to win it. But so I was pretty focused, all through from the practice round through the tournament day. But
amazing. That's such a great story.
Yeah, but I'm happy. I think I was happiest to come back.
Yeah.
But finishing fourth, definitely something to be proud of. So.
Absolutely. Making it home is something to be proud of, but I mean, the fact that you got to compete is so phenomenal. Frequently people will say, you've done so many interviews, who is your favorite? It's like, I don't know. I mean, I've talked to a lot of people. I've had some people that were really interesting and had interesting stories or great teachers, but this is the kind of story that I go, I had this guy on in 2014 when he was in his mid-20s, played in the North Korean Open Championship. It's too good. It's just too good of a story.
I appreciate that.
I mean, I can't wait for the movie. Have you sold the rights yet?
Oh gosh, I'm just happy that I'm able to continue to I'm telling it.
Yeah, right. Tell me about so
right now,
was there any issues coming?
I knew
home?
If I made it out, it was going to work.
Sure. Were there any issues coming home when it was all done? What was the how did that go?
Gosh, on that last day, I'm like, please just give me back my visa. Give me back my ID. Give me back my my passport, my plane ticket, and it's funny. There's no record of me in there. There's no stamp in my passport. They don't stamp when you come in. They don't stamp it when you go out. They stamp the tourist visa only. And then they keep the tourist visa. They keep that tourist visa. I thought that'd be a pretty neat kind of, I brought quite a few small souvenirs, but I thought that would be a really neat souvenir.
I think the scorecard is probably the coolest souvenir.
Scorecard's a neat souvenir.
Oh, absolutely.
But I thought, hey, who else has their tourist? And then they kept it. And then coming back into the U.S., of course they say, so where have you been? Where'd you fly back from? And there was no record of me flying. There's no record. There's no way to prove it. I mean, I had my plane ticket. Oh, and the plane ticket was like printed on maybe like 1980s printing paper.
Dot matrix printer.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, the DOS system. And just to avoid trouble, I said, I'm just coming back from Beijing. I spent a week in Beijing, and that was because there's no proof in my passport. I had nothing to show it, so they just let me through.
Well, I think that's probably a very smart idea, because if you said, I'm returning from North Korea, they're like, okay, there's a room right over here, we'd like to talk to you for a while.
Right.
Please
right,
step
right.
in the back. North Korea, really? You were there to play golf? Really? Really? No, really, I was there to play golf.
Yeah, it's a pretty bizarre. It's a bizarre story.
It's a great story. Oh, and I'm so glad you survived to tell it. And I'm sure your parents are totally relieved that when you got home. They probably said, "Hey, you want to go skating?" So that's just phenomenal. Any other tidbits?
Yeah, well, I'm having you on. I'm happy to share my story.
Yeah. Any other tidbits you remember you want to share? Anything else that stands out, or that's the story?
I mean, that's the story. I mean, there's so many weird moments, just so many bizarre moments, you know, that happened just over that 4 days. But I think, you know, that's it. That's my story.
That's a story.
There you go, Fred.
Okay. Justin Krybek, participant in the 2014 North Korean Open Championship and came in fourth out of 20. It's an awesome story, but no other Americans, no famous names, Justin Krybek. He's our winner.
No. There you go. I'll make sure to send you some photos of the tournament. And yeah.
All right, Justin, thanks so much for sharing your story. It's one of those things that I have a feeling people are going to repeat. It's so good. Thanks so much.
Thanks a lot, Fred.
Oh, my gosh. I just love that story. Justin did send over a couple photos, which should be included in our website and on the Golf Smarter app. Check those out. Now, if you've not been listening to Golf Smarter for a long time, then let me recommend another great true story that we exposed on this show. Episode number 238, featuring Jason Prio, is titled "The High School Golf Coach That Made the Cut at the U.S. Open." Yes, incredibly, he made the cut at the 2010 Open that was played at Pebble Beach, but he came in dead last. So, a great story that I stumbled across and loved and shared, and I want you to go back and hear it again. And thanks to those of you who sent in emails about the last two episodes on club fitting and club fitters. One requested that I do a video of a club fitting session. Funny you should ask. The most watched video we have on Golf Smarter TV is the club fitting I did with Nick Manzano back in October of 2013. It's the full hour of the fitting with two cameras. So if you're interested, please check it out. And if you don't have time to watch, that's okay, because with your Golf Smarter premium subscription, you can go back to episode number 405 and listen to it all as well. Nick was also featured in episodes 394 and 395. And actually, many of the Golf Smarter podcast conversations are also available on video. Please check them out at golfsmarter.com or subscribe for free to the YouTube channel Golf Smarter TV. And by the way, that fitting that I did with Nick, he put me into a driver that I still play and feel more comfortable with that club than any other club in my bag. I really have a lot of confidence in my driver to go far and straight. And it would not have happened. I know it wouldn't have happened if it wasn't for that fitting. To get all our new episodes automatically on your phone, don't forget to download the free Golf Smarter app for iOS and Android. But you probably already have it as a premium subscriber. So if you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.